Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is John Pfeffer, who is the co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Previously, he worked as an associate editor of the World Policy Journal and has been an international affairs representative in Eastern Europe and East Asia for the American Friends Service Committee. His books include Power Trip, U.S. Unilateralism and Global Strategy After September 11 and Crusade 2.0. And his latest article at Foreign Policy in Focus is Trump's Enablers Should Be Shamed Out of Public Life. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Pfeffer.
Thanks for having me back on the show.
Well, thank you, John. And if you are calling for Trump's enablers to be shamed out of public life, that's almost the entire U.S. Senate and U.S. Congress, at least on the Republican side, I should say. They're all putting up with his disgraceful antics simply to get their tax cuts and whatever the Koch brothers and Mercer and these billionaires tell them that they want. Isn't that what's going on?
Unfortunately, you're right. It's unquestionably true that Congress, or at least the Republicans, have been Trump's enablers, although they haven't enabled much, to be honest, from the congressional side. I mean, a lot of Trump's intended legislation, whether it's the repeal of health care or immigration, has not been pushed through by the Republicans, forcing the president to issue executive orders. But nevertheless, the Republicans have otherwise provided cover for the president. I was mostly interested, though, in my article in looking at this concept of the so-called adults in the room. And that means the people inside the administration, the putative adult supervision that is supposed to be preventing Donald Trump from, you know, engaging in the worst excesses. And so that, of course, would be his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, the head of the Pentagon, Jim Mattis, National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, and John Kelly, previously of the Homeland Security, but now his Chief of Staff. These are supposed to be his handlers, his whisperers, etc. And in my article, what I wanted to show was, in fact, these enablers, these people who are supposed to be the adults in the room, are in fact responsible for the worst excesses. In fact, even worse than what Congress or the congressional Republicans have been up to, because, of course, the congressional Republicans have been largely inept. His enablers within the administration, on the other hand, have basically taken what passes for ideas in Donald Trump's head and makes them into some form of reality. To give you one example, Rex Tillerson over at the State Department, despite his reputation for being the more diplomatic of the people inside the administration, has taken a knife to the State Department, has been involved in what he calls, rather euphemistically, reorganization.
So you mention in your article at Foreign Policy in Focus, Trump's enablers should be shamed out of public life. The recent article cover of the New York Review of Books by James Mann that traces the origin of the phrase adults in the room in terms of Washington parlance. Walk us through that.
Sure. So Mann's article is very interesting. In looking at a particular shift that has taken place in the language, particularly here in Washington. So the phrase adults in the room or adult supervision previously applied to kind of ideological limits. In other words, here in Washington, certain ideas are considered to be part of the mainstream, whereas other ideas fall outside the pale. And the adults in the room or the adult supervision are basically the people who know what the acceptable parameters of discussion are, ideologically speaking, and patrol those borders very carefully. And so when someone goes outside of these borders, the adults rein them back in, say, no, well, that's not really acceptable. And as Mann points out, you know, there are some people who are just never part of this mainstream conversation, were never really considered to be adults, people like Bernie Sanders or Rand Paul. These are people whose ideological points of view place them outside. the room, essentially.
Right, but it's now, but isn't it also a very underhand way of dismissing people that have valid but different ideas as more or less saying, well, they're on the fringes, they're crackpots?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it's a way of infantilizing them. I mean, obviously, if they're not adults, they are not they're not worthy of participating in the conversation. They should be at the kids' table. They should be quiet unless talking to, et cetera. All the kind of connotations we associate with kind of the split between an adult and a child. But what happens in the current era, of course, is that the phrase adult supervision changes. It is now used in mainstream discourse and mainstream media largely to apply to behavioral limits rather than ideological limits. In other words, it's almost taken for granted that the kind of mainstream of politics has shifted so far to the right that the phrase adults in the room refers to those people in the Trump administration who are there to restrain his behavior, not to restrain his ideology. In some sense, Trump doesn't really have an ideology, or at least he doesn't have a coherent ideology. So people like Rex Tillerson, James Mattis, they're there to prevent Donald Trump from following his instincts, if you will, to kind of be the superego to his id, to prevent him from launching nuclear weapons left and right, to prevent him from tweeting national security secrets to the entire world. However it's represented, they are there for behavioral reasons. So this is the interesting kind of transformation that Mann talks about.
So the idea is, though, that we should take comfort after that these people are around. And I think that in itself is fairly pernicious. And what you're talking about is that we shouldn't really take any comfort, because while they may be restraining Trump's more outrageous behavior personally, they are going along with his policies. Now, recently, of course, they did seem to have forced a compromise at least a little from Trump's outrageous demands about wanting to destroy Obamacare. There's a vague compromise there, although he's pretty much stabbed it in the back. And over the Iran deal, there's an alleged compromise. He wanted to tear it up altogether, but they kind of convinced him to punt it to the Congress. So is that would that go along with your analysis?
It does. Although, you know, the question really is whether we're dealing with a kind of a strategy. In other words, Trump kind of leads with the most outrageous demands, which, you know, either he and his administration together believe is just the opening bid, and then recognizing that the opening bid is going to be rejected, as if it were, for instance, a real estate deal, the adults come in and say, okay, well, he was just speaking kind of metaphorically, or he was speaking, it was a joke, or that's not exactly how you should interpret what he said. This is really what we want to do, and come back with this kind of, as you say, compromised language on the Iran nuclear deal, on healthcare. But I think it's both more complicated and less complicated than that. Less complicated in the sense that I don't think there's a strategy. I don't think that his advisors and Trump sit down and kind of plan out tactically how they're going to get something through. I think Trump just goes ahead and says what's on his mind, goes with his gut, so to speak, and then his advisors or the so-called adults have to scramble to kind of salvage something from this policy direction. So that's the less complicated thing. The more complicated thing is that I think that ultimately, at least from the point of view of the so-called adults, they have the same kind of end game in mind. In other words, let's say with the Iran nuclear deal, they recognize that that it would look bad for the United States to pull out of the nuclear agreement. They want the nuclear agreement to fail. They just want it to fail a different way. They want it to fail with Iran pulling out because Iran is so disgusted or fed up or frustrated with U.S. conduct. They want, you know, healthcare they want Obamacare to fail, but they want it to fail in a way in which they can, you know, deny culpability for its failure. So I think, you know, that's a more complicated kind of aspect of so-called adult behavior. But from my point of view, you know, it is just as bad, or one could argue worse than Trump's behavior or Trump's policy directions, because, you know, these people, these adults, so-called adults, are really the ones responsible for the tremendous militarism of U.S. foreign policy at the moment, the kind of unraveling of any kind of multilateral engagement the United States might have in the world, responsible for the kind of auto-destruction of the federal government, the unraveling of federal programs and the axing of agencies, unraveling of environmental regulations. These are the people who are actually implementing it on a daily basis. And so that's, for me, you know, why they are the ones that should be held responsible, and they should eventually have to pay some kind of price for it.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, there's, of course, a famous movie in the 1960s by John Frankenheimer, 7 Days in May, that was about a military coup against what was considered a kind of weak and dovish American president who wanted to appease the Soviet Union, and these red-blooded generals came in and had a coup. Now, some people have argued that what we have today in the White House is the opposite of a military coup. You actually have the military restraining a crazy civilian who is the president of the United States. I take it you're not entirely in agreement with that theory.
Well, you know, at one level, yes, of course. I mean, the restraint is at the lowest possible denominator, and that is prevention of nuclear war, okay? So, yes, it seems, at least up to this point, they've prevented him from, you know, raining fire and fury down on North Korea. But if we look at kind of military policy more generally, I don't see much restraint. I mean, certainly if we're talking about military spending, if we're talking about military exports to countries like Saudi Arabia, if we're talking about support for other countries' wars, like the Saudi war in Yemen, if we're talking about continuation of the longest war in U.S. history, the sending of additional troops to Afghanistan, aggravating of the horrors in Syria, the potential for greater conflict of a non-nuclear nature with North Korea. Well, frankly, I don't see much restraint there. So I wouldn't let them off the hook by saying that they have had necessarily a positive influence. Now, again, like I said, if all we're talking about is nuclear war and preventing it, okay, sure, that's fine. I'm happy that they're there to prevent that from happening, but that's a pretty low bar.
Well, in closing then, what do you think is going to happen? We talked earlier in the program about Trump's escalation of the battle with the widow and how at the new low, where he's basically calling the widow of a slain Green Beret a liar, and John McCain is now entering the fray, calling him a draft dodger, in effect implying that he, a rich kid that avoided the Vietnam War over a bone spur, which was certainly the case. Where do you think we're heading in terms of civilian-military relations in this country?
Well, I think this goes back to the initial point, and that is kind of the role of Congress and the role of Republicans in Congress. And this is why I hesitate to throw all Republicans in Congress into this category of enablers, even though I would agree that they are. But I do think that, tactically speaking, we're going to see people like John McCain, people like Bob Corker, senator from Tennessee, pull away from Trump and pull away from the administration. They will be forced to, because it will simply become unacceptable from the point of view of their constituencies, from the point of view of their own morality, from the point of view of the preservation of the Republican Party, to align themselves with the president. And that ultimately is going to be the deciding factor. It might not be the deciding factor, you know, after the next elections, if the Democrats do not, you know, retake Congress. But it will be a deciding factor at some point. And then, you know, there'll be a much thicker line between those who continue to support Donald Trump and implement his policies and those increasingly within his own party, not speaking of the opposition, those within his own party who have abandoned him and have taken a more principled stand.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, John Pfeffer.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And again, I've been speaking with John Pfeffer, who's the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he has an article, Trump's Enablers Should Be Shamed Out of Public Life. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.